This is a podcast from the South China Morning Post.
While the pandemic continues to rage around the world, China is bracing for a new disaster unfolding within its borders. After months of dealing with the spread of coronavirus, after locking down its cities, conducting millions of tests and trying to restart its economy, China now faces a new threat.
The Yangtze River Basin is facing heavy rain again. In some cities, water level exceeds the overflow warning level by 6 feet.
There's been torrential rain and flooding in central China too. In Hubei province, towns are submerged in meters of polluted floodwater.
Damage is estimated to be in the hundreds of millions of dollars.
Get that in August, there will be at least twice as much heavy rainfall in the upstream areas of the Yangtze River.
And this weekend, weather experts are forecasting more downpours of torrential rain. Welcome to the Inside China podcast. My name is Mimi Lau. In this episode, I'm going to give you some background to this unfolding disaster across China. And I'm going to speak to a reporter you've heard from a couple of times before on this podcast. Phoebe Zhang is one of my colleagues on the China desk for the South China Morning Post. Recently, she traveled to the city of Wuhan, but not to cover the coronavirus story. And this time, it was to find out how people were coping after the Yangtze River flooded.
The rescuers, they always had to bring a guide from the village on board who could tell the houses in relation to another, and he could navigate, and then he would know where all the electric wires are, where all the rocks, where the trees are, because it was really difficult. Everything was underwater. It was difficult to see.
The Yangtze River, or as we say it in Chinese, Changjiang, is the longest river in Asia, and the Yangtze River Basin is home to roughly a third of the entire population of China. It is also home to the biggest hydroelectric dam in the world, the Three Gorges Dam. And right now, all eyes are on that dam. The area affected by flood stretches from the Sichuan province in southwestern China, all the way east to Jiangsu on China's eastern coast near Shanghai. And that's about 2,000 kilometers. Let me explain that for you if you have never been to this part of China. It's roughly about the same distance between Los Angeles and Central Texas. It takes in Chongqing, Yichang, Wuhan, Nanjing cities, and parts of Jiangsu province. The river is a crucial link for moving people, agriculture, imports and exports from southwest China to the massive ports at Shanghai on the east coast. Not only is the Yangtze River the busiest river in the world, it is also connected to 700 other tributaries. According to China's Ministry of Water Resources, more than 400 of these have gone above the flood control level since June, and 33 of them are at record high levels. For the Chinese people, flooding along the Yangtze River is not new. In 1954, floods killed an estimated 30,000 people, and 18 million people were affected. In 1998, the Yangtze flooded again, and 3,000 people were killed, and an estimated 15 million were left homeless. After the 1998 flood, the Beijing central government massively increased spending on flood defenses, more money than it had spent in total over the previous 50 years. But here we are in 2020, and meteorologist Song Lianchun from China's National Climate Center has announced that a subtropical weather system over the Northwest Pacific Ocean that was stronger than usual has led to consistent heavy rain over the Yangtze River Basin. But there's something else climate scientists have noticed over the past few decades. Each year, since 1960, the number of days of heavy rain in China has gone up almost 4% per decade. Since the mid-1990s, the frequency of extreme rainfall has increased dramatically. And while the climate has been changing, the people have been building. And by that, I mean there's been decades of land reclamation where people have filled in lakes and waterways to build more housing and more buildings. And this has reduced the size of some of China's biggest freshwater lakes along the Yangtze River. And that means when rivers flow into them, suddenly rise in height, there's nowhere for the extra water to go. One of the big concerns right now is Poyang Lake in Jiangxi Province. It is China's largest freshwater lake. If you're into military history, go and look up the Battle of Poyang Lake. It was the scene of one of the largest naval battles of all time back in the 1300s. Now, Poyang Lake is fed by five rivers, the Gan, the Fu, the Xin, the Rao, and the Xiu, which then feed into the Yangtze River, China's number one longest river. Just in the past decades alone, the surface area of Poyang Lake has decreased by roughly 1,300 square kilometers, or 500 square miles. That's a little bit bigger than the size of Houston, Texas. Just think about that right now. A lake of the size of Houston. And now, take that away and think, where is all this new water flowing down the Yangtze right now going to go? A couple of weeks ago, China's National Climate Center told reporters that this year's rains aren't the same as 1998. They're only affecting the middle and lower reaches of the river. But that is still going to affect many millions of people.
We've got some big news coming to you about the South China Morning Post. Starting in August, we're bringing in a brand new digital subscription service. You'll still get unlimited access to our new and archived podcasts, but we're going to ask you to sign up for a subscription to access SCMP.com and the SCMP mobile app. It's going to work like this. You'll be able to read several stories each month for free, and after that, you'll need to be a subscriber to access more. You'll be helping to support SCMP's award-winning news reporting, in-depth analysis, and investigative journalism that lead the global conversation on China. We're introducing this in stages to our different audiences around the world, but you'll read all about it first at our website, scmp.com.
Phoebe Zhang has been touring some of these areas with SCMP video journalist Tang Wang.
We started in Wuhan in around mid-July, and then we stayed there for 2 days, and then we went east along the Yangtze River to sort of the Poyang Lake area and visiting a few villages, and we spent about 1 or 2 days in each of the villages or cities, and the overall we took about 10 days.
What did you find in Wuhan?
In Wuhan, we saw that people were busy fending against the flood. The river runs through the city, and there's a huge commercial area right around the river. They have banks, shopping centers, and then it's a very long promenade and pavilions, grasslands. And we saw a lot of workers sort of fending against the river. They were building up 2-meter-high dikes to try to prevent the water from flowing into the city. In a lot of areas, the river has risen over, sort of flooding the promenade and then some of the commercial areas. But then the public didn't seem that worried because a lot of the residential areas are far away from the river. So a lot of people were there sort of swimming in the river and, you know, taking their kids there and taking pictures. And on the other side, the workers were really busy sort of preparing for the flood.
Did you mention in your story that people were swimming in the river of Wuhan?
Yes, actually, because the river runs through the city, and then it's been always been a sort of entertaining part of people's lives, and there's always been people swimming in the river and playing by the river. And even though the level of the river has risen, and some parts of the promenade and the pavilions were flooded, I still saw people swimming in the river. I actually saw an old guy. He came up from the river, and then he held a squash about the size of people's head, and he said that he found that in the river. And they didn't seem scared or worried at all, and they said the flooding occurs every summer, and as long as it doesn't make it into the city, and as long as they had preparations going on, then they're fine.
Wow, that's astonishing, absolutely astonishing. So you spent 2 days in Wuhan, and what happened after that?
Afterwards, we went to the Poyang Lake vicinity to a village called Dixi. There are lots of villages along the Poyang Lake. And what happened was, after the water came from upstream of the Yangtze River, they flowed into the lake. But then the lake has already hit record highs in several areas, so that water has nowhere to go. And it was going back into the river and into some of the tributaries. And it broke 14 riverbanks along the lake and flooding a lot of the villages there. So we went to one of them. That's Dixi.
And these are the rural areas we are talking about. What did you see in Dixi? How did the civilians' livelihood being affected?
I think these people are the most affected in the flood. The villages, I spoke to them and they said when the riverbank broke, they heard a sort of whooshing sound, and then the water basically just came really quickly. It rushed up to their village, basically moving to the second floors within hours.
Was it unprecedented for them to come across a flood this huge before?
They likened it to the 1998 Great Flood. There was another historic Great Flood. They've seen flood in some areas almost every year or a couple of years, but then they've never seen anything this scale. It brought back memories of the 1998 flood.
So how did they fare? How did they survive this?
So they've had the warning for days, and then everybody was busy moving everything that they had upstairs, like clothes, blankets, and products that they sold in supermarkets, like rice packets or nails and screws. But then they didn't foresee that the riverbank was going to break. So they had limited time, and then when they saw it break, they only had hours before the water completely reached up to the second floor. So some people ran across the bridge into another town, but for those people who didn't have time to run, they were trapped on the third floors of their houses, and they had to be rescued out by boats. So Tom and I, we rowed a rescue boat with the fire department, and then we went house to house rescuing those people.
So what was the most astonishing picture when you were with them on the same boat?
I think it was really difficult to imagine when you're on land what it would look like. The entire village had become a lake, and the houses were like isolated islands in the lake. When you were out there in lake, it was really difficult to tell where the roads used to be. So the rescuers, they always had to bring a guide from the village on board who could tell the houses in relation to another, and he could navigate, and then he would know where all the electric wires are, where all the rocks, where the trees are, because it was really difficult. Everything was underwater. It was difficult to see. And then the motors could easily get caught in tree branches or with wires or floating debris on the lake. So they really had to know exactly where everything was before. Sometimes there's electricity in the water, so they couldn't dive in or touch a lot of the debris that's floating on the water. I think that's the most astonishing thing I've seen.
So you also spoke to some people that are called the night watchers. Who are these night watchers exactly? What did they do?
So basically what they did was, on one hand, they had people rescuing villages from the lake. On the other, for those riverbanks that have not breached, villages and local officials, they acted as night watchers. They would take shifts along the riverbanks and then dikes all night long, checking for any leaks, any signs of the leaks. The people, they would hold flashlights, and then they would take walks along the kilometers long dikes, and they check very carefully for any sort of small leak or bubbles, you know, that would indicate the water was trying to breach through.
And the houses, they were sliding around the lake like a Titanic style.
Yes, the villagers showed us some of the videos that they took, because obviously we weren't there when the breaching happened. So the villagers took videos with their phones and they showed it to us. when the dike broke, some of the houses that were very close to the point where the dike broke, they were directly impacted by the flood water. So the foundation broke and then the houses slid into the lake, sort of Titanic style. It disappeared within seconds.
Wow.
But I think it was very fortunate that the villagers got away. He was not in the house to begin with, but he stood watching maybe 100 feet away, and then he saw his own house slide into the water.
Phoebe, when it comes to covering natural disaster in China, apart from the magnitude of the disaster, it was also the spirit of the people. Could you share with us some of the most moving stories, tales that you have collected on the scene from the local people there?
I think what struck me most is that the people who were living alongside the river, they had to deal with this multiple times. And it's sort of how they rebuild time after time that felt very touching. And one woman I talked to, she was in her 50s. She said she experienced the same thing in 1998 when the great historic flood hit. Back then she was in her 20s and then she had just gotten married and she lost her house in the water. She was trapped in her house for 3 months because back then they didn't have as many rescuers and lots of people. They had to help themselves. She and her husband lived in the flood, trapped in their house for 3 months. They had junk water and food that they stored up previously. Obviously, there was no bathroom on the rooftop, so they had to just sort of go in the flood water. And she said she couldn't sleep well every night because sometimes it rained and then she was afraid that she might fall into the flood. And she heard that her neighbor was trying to save her son and fell into the water and died. So all those horror stories, she was trapped there for 3 months and she just trying to survive. And every day she prayed that the water would just go down.
But it is also an amazing story of resilience.
Exactly, yeah. She survived that. And then this year she was faced with this flood, but she said she's a little bit better prepared this time, and then she was ready to rebuild after this.
Phoebe, you also went to Jingdezhen, right? Jingdezhen is mostly known by our Western readers out there as the most famous porcelain capital in China, where so much of China's ceramics come from. So what was the situation there?
The business owners in Jingdezhen, they suffered great losses. And it's actually the second loss this year because they've obviously been suffering through the coronavirus outbreak. They've had no business for 3 to 5 months. And then they've just begun again in May or June and the flood hit them again. So some of the business owners I talked to, their shops were completely submerged in water. The water reached 1 meter or 2 meter high, and some of their shelves were knocked off the ground, and the vases and the cups that they had broke on the ground. And for those vases that didn't break, the owners had to wash the dirt off them, and so they had to close their shops for a couple weeks or even months. So that's another uncertainty for their business.
With the rains forecast this weekend, is there a sense that the worst is yet to come for these affected areas along the Yangtze River?
I think there are several rounds. They keep really close attention on the weather. When I was there, they said the first round of the flood was just passing by. And then the second week was the second round. And now I think there's the third round of flood water going by. And then when it goes by to those areas, everybody's keeping a really close watch. And then they're evacuating people when they have to. And the young people, they're calling the young people to join them and to build up embankments to do all the preparations.
And what are you seeing and hearing on Chinese social media right now? How are the people from the rest of the country responding to this flood?
I think what I'm seeing on social media is a lot of people praying that people can breathe through the flood and there can be as little casualty as possible. I think the concerns are there may not be enough supplies, like rescue supplies or food, and there's been some calls for people to donate. And another concern is for those people affected to get the right amount of compensation that they deserve, because a lot of those people are rural villages, and then their fields are being flooded, their houses have fallen into the flood, and it takes years, maybe up to a decade, for them to rebuild.
Thank you so much for talking with us tonight. Would you be headed back into these affected areas again next week?
I think it depends. I might take another trip into Anhui, because the situation changes every day, where what areas are affected, what areas are getting more heavy rain, and I think it's just changing every day.
Well, thank you so much, Phoebe, for doing this incredibly courageous reporting, taking our readers to the front line, bringing us back valuable video and reporting. We look forward to hear from you soon, and please stay safe in this time of coronavirus.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
That's all we have for you this week for Inside China. There are more torrential rain forecasts, and the floodwaters are rising along the Yangtze River. And Phoebe Zhang is part of the SCMP team reporting on it as it happens. As we say quite often on this podcast, this is a developing story. Please keep up to date with the latest via our website at scmp.com. Thank you for listening. My name is Mimi Lau. Until next time, keep your distance, keep your mask on, and stay safe. Bye-bye.